What's going on, everybody? I'd like to welcome y'all back to Sync Music Mondays. Every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Y'all know what it is. Me and my brother Jazz, a.k.a. The Best. We're talking about music licensing in the coolest form, because we are the coolest. And it's financial literacy for your music. And as always, before we get started, you know, we got to start off with the word of the day. Now, JS, he couldn't be here today because he's actually traveling right now to D.C., so I'm holding it down. So you're going to see this up on the screen. And the word of the day is very simple, and it's this. Self-care is multiple streams of income. I'll say that again. Self-care is multiple streams of income. So ultimately, what that means is at the end of the day, whatever situation that you're in, you want to make sure that you position yourself to empower yourself. So don't just put all your eggs in one basket. Make sure that you got several streams of income. So if, God forbid, one of those streams start to dry up, you've got multiple options. You know, it's kind of like investing in the stock market. Whether you have Apple, Amazon, Tesla, whatever your favorite is, you want to make sure you don't have too much of one thing. So if one starts to underperform, you got something that'll carry the weight. All right. So essentially, that's what it is. Multiple streams of income, Sync Music Mondays. And that is the word of the day. But today, we have a very special, amazing, talented guest. This is a dear friend of mine. She is a boss. She is an entrepreneur. She's a wife, she's a mom, and she's just all around dope. And she runs Audio Socket, which is a phenomenal music licensing company. It is no other than the legend, Jen Anderson Miller. What's up, Jen?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. I think I said this the last time we talked. I'm definitely letting you introduce me every single time. It's pretty awesome.
Well, you know, I appreciate you, and you're one of the juggernauts when it comes to music licensing. So we really appreciate you listening to the show, because we got so many talented musicians on a global scale, whether it's Nigeria, Italy, the US, that really want to learn about licensing. So thank you for taking out the time to actually talk with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. So, you know, I kind of gave the people a glossed over view of who you are, but can you tell the people in your own words who is Jen Anderson Miller?
Sure. So I am an entrepreneur, as you said. I've always definitely grabbed on to the word of the day, or a couple words, I guess, as it stands, but just multiple streams of income. So I've always kind of had my hands in a few different things, and Audio Socket stuck. And it's been about 15 years now that we've been operational. Even within Audio Socket, we actually have a family of brands, which is, to your point again, multiple streams of income. We have a film and TV arm of our business. We have a kind of an e-commerce, user-generated content, social platform, and then we have an integratable API. So I started this, almost 15 years ago now. And even before that, I was working in action sports as an executive director. I had a couple of other businesses going, but at the same time, as you mentioned, I'm a mom, and I think being a mom is the best thing I've ever done. But having Audio Socket is definitely another baby of mine and kind of my labor of love.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, you know, you've definitely succeeded, you know, I mean, beyond measure. Like, Audio Socket is a phenomenal company. They do so much for artists, including myself. You know, for a lot of you guys who might not be aware, Audio Socket was actually the first music licensing company that I ever signed a deal with. An amazing company, amazing people. So, you know, really grateful for them. You know, kind of backtrack a little bit, Jen. Like, I want to know, like, how did you get started in music? Like, what was your beginnings like in that regard? Like, did you always know, like, hey, I want to go into the music business? Or is this something that kind of just you pivoted from maybe doing something else at one point in time?
since I was little, music has always been a passion of mine. I mean, I used to sing in choirs and I did a band at one time, and you know, my parents were very musical, and my cousins. So I always remember music being a huge part of my life, sitting in front of my dad's record player. But as far as working in the music industry, it wasn't something that I think I thought that's what I'm going to go do. And then when I was doing the Extreme Sports Organization, I was in my 20s and in, quite honestly, just bars and places where bands were playing a lot. And I used to always discover new music. And so at one point, a guy that managed one of the professional snowboard teams had asked me if I could help clear some music. They were having problems. And I was very excited to do this, jumped in to clear some famous music and discovered how complex it is to license music, and then turned to indie bands and artists, where I had started to kind of get to know people in that realm. And that was really what led me down this path of music, is finding this hole, kind of this gap where it was so difficult to clear famous music, but then there were all these indie bands and artists. And I just felt like it was kind of a clear path for me to go and pursue. So, yeah, one career into the next, I guess.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, that's dope. I like what you said, because it's kind of like, you know, we had Jim Huswick on the show as well. I know you know Jim. And, you know, he said, you know, Kyle, I'm a pivoter, you know. So I think a lot of people, a lot of times, especially like with fate, destiny, what they're supposed to be doing, sometimes you might start out on one path, and it's not that you're going down the wrong path per se. You might just have to pivot a little bit to get you in the right direction. So, you know, just kind of following those cues and knowing, hey, you know what, I'm passionate about this, I'm talented at this, and this is the way for me to go, you know.
Life is pivot, right? I mean, I think that is a career. I think you probably across time figure out where, what at AudioSucket I call it unique brilliance. It's where you love what you do so much that you want to do it all the time, and then I think you continue to iterate on that and probably find yourself across time with new interests, hopefully chasing those dreams, those interests, and that is the pivot, right? So hopefully you can do what you do best across each one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, for all the artists out there, that's the key word to pivot. Like, you know, don't be afraid to change things up. I think sometimes people, especially artists, they can get tunnel vision. So they're used to doing things a certain way. But you got to think outside the box and think about different strategies and ways that you can maneuver to actually get the success that you want. So, you know, like even something little, like I know hashtags are a big deal with artists too. It's like, you know, they put in hashtags, but sometimes they'll recycle the same hashtags, you know, and sometimes you got to look at that and say, all right, well, you know what, let me try some different hashtags to switch it up that might get more traction. So, you know, always pivoting, trying new things, you know.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah. So I had another question for you, Jen. I know that, you know, being a CEO can be very challenging. So, you know, as many wins that you have, there are some obstacles that you have to overcome. So could you kind of specify for the listeners, like maybe one obstacle that you had to overcome at one point in time on the business front that, you know, you really had to make adjustments in order to get where you wanted to go?
So many. I mean, that's, you know,
take your time.
So many. But I think what I have kind of found a little frustrating, but now we're circling back, is when we started AudioSucket, we really set out to streamline music licensing in an indie capacity. So for independent artists, giving them opportunity, you know, within quite honestly, initially we were really targeting freelancers, indie creators who were having those same issues. So we launched a integration, a partnership with Vimeo in 2011, and it was really, I mean, a very innovative thing. Nobody had done anything like this where music was now available to purchase online for micro licensing, is as it's known today. At that time, it didn't even have a name, but really for personal use and for, you know, $99 for a freelancer using it for a mom and pop shop, that kind of thing. So that was really exciting to innovate in that way and be the first to you know, work on what's now micro licensing. But there were so many challenges and hurdles that it actually nearly killed us at one point. For example, the platforms really just weren't ready to handle licensed music. They didn't know how to differentiate between licensed music, unlicensed music. But what was very clear is that DRM technologies were sophisticated enough to identify the copyrights. So while that's a win overall, like artists, you know, deserve sustainable careers, artists deserve for their music to be protected and therefore recognized in these systems, there was no actual way when people were doing the right thing to acknowledge that. And so fast forward now, you know, a decade from when we launched that partnership, those platforms and systems exist now. But when we came out the gate, we were just quite honestly too early. And so we kind of had to retreat, and we did something else for a couple of years. So again, back to your pivoting and multiple revenue streams. We've done all of it. And so now that's really kind of how our family of brands came about, because we really started diving back into, diving into film and TV, mm-hmm. while the ecosystem was working to build up. Today, however, there's so much opportunity in user-generated content, TikTok, you know, YouTube, Triller, Meta, Instagram, all over the place. I think now we're getting back to our roots, but it took quite a long time and in many years.
Wow. You know, and you made a great point when you said there's so much opportunity that's available for artists right now. And you're right, because I think sometimes artists get discouraged, like they see, you know, they might not be getting the results that they want. So whether they want a record deal, whether they want radio play, but I kind of feel like this time, this day and age that we're in right now, is like the epitome of opportunity for artists, because you don't need a record label per se, right? You know, it used to be back in the day, it's like, I had to get a deal. I remember pressing up like 2,000 CDs and driving around Queens, New York, selling them out the trunk of my car until I got a couple record deals. And that was the hustle back then. But now you can make something in your home studio, put it out online, goes viral, gets a bunch of streams, and you're doing okay for yourself, you know, or get something in TV and film. So when you say that, yeah, it's so true. You know, a song can take off on TikTok, and next thing you know, you got multiple placements. So a lot of opportunity out there, you know, 100%. I agree with you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's an exciting time. I mean, music is one of the quickest moving industries, in my opinion, right now. I mean, when you just watch how far it's come, just the fact that that you remember putting you know, CDs in the back of your trunk. I mean, that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. And it was a grind. You know, I remember I used to take those CDs, and I had my street team, and I had three guys, and we would go around just locally, and we would sell them in bulk. So, you know, if I had like 100 CDs, I'll tell the guy, listen, you know what? I'll give you half price, because I was getting the CDs printed for so cheap. I think each CD probably cost me like maybe 20 cents per CD to get them burnt and packaged. So, you know, I would cut the price down for them. I was still making a high profit margin. I say, hey, you know, I'll let you sell them for whatever you want. So those were good times, you know. But then we went from CDs to MP3s, then from MP3s to the streaming era. So everything has changed, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but good times. Memory lane, Case Park's memory lane for y'all. So I had another question for you. Audio Socket is such like a power player in the music licensing industry, and you guys get so many placements, it's crazy. Can you tell me like a couple that are your favorite, maybe that, you know, well, not necessarily favorite, that but kind of come to mind that you were proud of, that you got it, like it made you feel good?
So I always refer back to, just because I think it's such a cool one, the Knives Out movie trailer. Very iconic, and it really was at a time that we were developing a production catalog, which we hadn't done before. It was all bands and you know, kind of touring artists, and then we sort of started building that out as well, just so that we had a really well-rounded offering. So that was exciting. I think that was one of the very first movie trailers that came in when we started working on movie trailers. You know, we have an amazing relationship with Monster Energy. That's a company that we've worked with for, I mean, almost a decade now. And it's just one of those things that, you know, started really small and then grew and grew over time. And now we have an incredible relationship with their entire global team. And I think we feel great about that. It's just, you know, they've given us the opportunity to service a global team. And I think our team has really stepped up in a big way to meet the demand. And obviously, I know you've had a ton of success with Monster Energy.
Oh, yeah.
Your music, yeah. They love it.
Definitely.
But I think it's offered a lot of artists a lot of revenue opportunities. So that's a really exciting one. And honestly, I get excited all the time. I know you had some placements last year in several different TV shows. It's always exciting. Like, you know, when my team, I get the end of week reports and I see where the music's going. And yeah, it's just cool. Whether it's a Super Bowl commercial, which we've done a few of, or whether it's, you know, just needle drop in a background music scene of a TV show, or it's somebody's amazing personal video that just inspired me. It's, I don't know. I just love watching the magic happen between, you know, the marriage of something that is silent and then you add the music and all of a sudden you bring it to life.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's amazing. And you know, like you said, I've had so much success with Monster Energy thanks to y'all. Just a lot of my songs being placed with them. And then even like last year alone, like we had a lot of NBC placements, a lot of major placements. And, you know, a couple big ones coming down the pipeline, too, that we can't talk about just yet.
Yeah.
But we we got some goodies. We got some goodies. Goodies coming down the pipeline. So, yeah, definitely amazing success. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, too, Jen, because I think artists really don't know the difference between these two things. And this is a question that they ask me because a lot of times in advance we'll have we'll just shoot out to our Discord. Hey, we got this person coming on. So one question was, what's the difference between a performing rights organization like ASCAP BMI and a sub publisher? Like, could you explain that for the listeners?
A sub publisher is working within the construct of the performing rights organizations, but they're actually working to get your music into sync placements in their territory. And so with the music, like our production catalog, we do sub publish it. And so we work in different countries where we're not the primary representative, but we have companies similar to AudioSocket in these other countries working that catalog for sync. It is interesting. You do have to be exclusive to work in the sub-publishing realm. So we have both exclusive and non-exclusive artists. We can't sub-publish non-exclusive artists because they do go and register those titles and then they care for them. They make sure that everything is flowing through, that, you know, they're making sure that the cue sheets are filed, that the placements are detected, that everything's, you know, again, flowing through those systems. So they are hand in hand, but a performing rights organization is, you know, every country has one. That's really where the royalties are tracked and paid from. And then the sub-publishers would be the people that are placing in these territories, feeding those placements through the PROs, because most countries, unlike the U.S., really just pay via royalties. A lot of countries don't have an upfront sync fee, or they just pay the PRO for their country, and that gives them rights to any music, regardless of whether it's famous or not famous. That's how most countries operate.
Well, that's a lot of gems right there. You dropped a lot of gems because, yeah, a lot of people, they didn't understand that, you know, the difference between the two. So that's important, definitely, to have, you know, to have that representation on a global scale, because they're able to make sure, like you said, that they're monetizing properly and that nothing slips through the cracks, you know. So, Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So another question that I have for you, you know, we have a lot of singers, a lot of rappers, music producers that want to get into sync. And some of them have been able to get placements. Some of them don't even know where to start. So for the musicians that are just starting out, they want to get their music into TV and film, but they don't know like where to start. What's a word of advice that you would give to like a new artist like that, that wants to get in sync? Like, how should they get the ball rolling in your opinion?
There's so much information online these days that I would start with research and understand who you are in the world of music and in the world of sync, because companies like AudioSocket, most sync agents have sort of a niche. And whether that is film and TV or movie trailers or advertisements, or they work with jazz artists, or they, you know, represent hip hop artists, we actually are a bit of an anomaly in that sense that we do kind of have that well-rounded catalog, but we're almost 15 years old. So, you know, of course, that's part of the time that we've been around that's enabled us to kind of have a really well-rounded, diverse catalog. But I do always recommend to artists, I think for me, I take it really seriously if we're going to rep an artist. And so that's why we have non-exclusive and exclusive. If we're not quite sure if what you do is in our niche, we'd actually rather represent you non-exclusively, just so that we're not tying you up in a deal where we're not quite sure if it's the right fit or not, or if we have, you know, the right creative briefs coming in. And then with exclusive artists, we're really, kind of filling our sweet spot, I would say. And that's really where we feel like that artist, like, you know, I know we represent some of your catalog exclusively. Mm-hmm. We know that we're going to have success. I think it's research, it's seeing which agents are going to work your music the best. It's, you know, figuring out where you can even submit to have your music represented. I think gone is the day where people recommend that anybody reach out direct to music supervisors. I think even the coaches out there, people like you and Ari, are telling people, you know, music supervisors are hit up by everybody anymore, and their information is sold out there. So hitting them up individually is really not an effective strategy. Right. So figure out who's going to do best with your music, and understand too, like AudioSocket, we accept less than 1% of the music that's accepted or submitted to us. And that's both on the audition front as well as new music coming in. And we do that because we want to maintain the value that we have with the artists that we already represent. We're not adding music that's not kind of either hitting at or above what we've already got in those genres. And we're not trying to layer on music again that we don't necessarily feel we get requests for or would have success for. So do understand that, you know, if you're out there and you're auditioning for a number of different licensing platforms, if they say no, then hopefully it's a pretty thoughtful approach to why. And it's not just no for the sake of no, but no because, you know, we don't do well with this type of music, or no because you got to get your mixes and your mastering up to a certain level, and ask for feedback. If they'll give it to you, it's typically pretty awesome to get the feedback.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Those are great points. And, you know, I want to circle back on one thing that you said was key, like, you know, call it R&D, like research and development. Do your own R&D, like go online, research these companies. Like normally they'll show like the artist roster. So for all those artists out there, click on the artist roster and see who's on that roster. I always liken it because I love basketball. You know, you see my Lakers hat, right? I just love basketball. So everything's like a sports analogy for me, and that's how I look at like being a artist on a sync roster. Like when you look at that artist roster, if you see they got like five rappers or as opposed to another company that has like 100 rappers, right? You know that you may be able to get a spot on that roster, right? You know, it's like if you see a basketball team that already has 10 point guards and you're a point guard, don't go to that team, you know, because you're not going to get a lot of playing time. So, you know, just be mindful, you know, like Jen said, do your R&D, research development, Google all these different companies, see which one you feel you would be a good fit for, and then reach out professionally. Like, I agree with you 110%. Like, there's an art to being able to network with people, you know, and not everybody is good at that. So, you know, don't randomly DM music supervisors on LinkedIn and you know, just sending them Spotify links. They didn't even ask for it. And, you know, and you're bombarding them with this stuff. Or, you know, sometimes like I'll get emails and they're sending like 10 attachments and then my whole email is filled up. I can't download anything. So, you know, just be mindful, be courteous, be respectful, you know, and be professional. Like, you know, they say, you know, being humble will take you places money can't sometimes. So just your whole approach, you know, and just being professional. So, you know, a lot of gems, Jen, definitely.
Yeah, I'll kind of add on that too. Most like music licensing companies will have a submission or audition process. And I would say, you know, follow that audition process. I know it takes time. For us, we try to get to everything within 90 days, but quite honestly, it often takes longer than that. But understand that that's because every single audition is getting a good hard review. I think if we were just being flippant about it, then we'd get back very quickly. But I think we are trying to be thoughtful in our approach to those auditions. So, you know, respect kind of what they've laid out as the process. It's funny, people do hit me up on LinkedIn, and the reality is I am not the person. Like, I'm not the one. I even if I love your music, I still am asking permission of my team. I mean, they would quite honestly, they don't want me picking the music. You know, they're very qualified to do it. They know what we need. So, you know, so know that when people have those processes in place, the right people are listening to the music. And for us, that's a combination of a few different people on our team who basically know what creative briefs are coming in, what we're placing, what we don't need, what we do need. And again, back to what I said earlier, there are quite honestly a lot of times where we have to say no, even because it's great music. We already have so much great music in that genre that we just don't want to dilute what we already have. So yeah, and again, I mean, that really goes back to the whole, I think we've always tried to be really artist-friendly in our approach. And to me, it's way more artist-friendly not to accept an artist if you already know that you've got a lot going on there. Yeah. One other thing, we don't put our artist roster on the site, and it's mainly because over the years, people have just gone and tried to pilfer the artist roster. And we've seen that a number of times. And so, you know, it's not easy for someone to come to the site and grab all of our artists and start kind of trying to bring them over to the next best thing, which is going to undercut us and our artists and the money that people pay for it. Mm-hmm. You know, what I would recommend for our site, and I think a lot of similar sites don't have their full artist roster, is listen to the music in your genre. Do they have it? If they do, am I there? You know, like, am I at that level? So if you go and you hear K-Sparks on AudioSocket, like, listen to K-Sparks. Are you there? And you're going to hear a consistency usually, like, is the quality. Well, if it's inconsistent, that's one thing. I think on AudioSocket, you're going to find a very consistent level of quality of the musicianship. You're going to hear the level of, again, mixing, mastering. A lot of times that's really kind of the thing that puts it over the fence. So pay attention to those things. And yeah, and I think you'll have a good sense if you're a fit.
Definitely. And even within that, Jen, like you said, so many gems, like mixing, mastering, like making sure that your music meets that standard, because, you know, that represents you. Like, your music is your business card. So you want to make sure you got the best representation possible. You know, and don't cut corners, like, make sure it's definitely a representation of you and what you bring to the table. So great points. Definitely. So, I had just a few more questions for you, Jen. You know, now this one is, and I remember I'd asked you this before, but you know, things change. It's a new year, so maybe you got a new one. And that is, what is your mantra? So, you know, mine's is persistence wears down resistance. Collaboration is greater than competition. I love building bridges with new people. So is your mantra the same as last time? Is it a, you know, new year, new you, 2023? You got you know, people say that new year, they start going to the gym and all this nonsense. They go to the gym for like a week, then they're done. So
Right. You know, I think at Audio Socket, I think a lot about the way that we as a team collaborate and the way that we operate. And to be honest, even more so than, I mean, I feel like I'm trying to do a lot of things at Audio Socket that are moving the needle. One of them is I really try to sort of redefine what is corporate culture. And so for Audio Socket, we are very peer-based. I want everybody to understand that it doesn't matter if you're the newest member of the team or the oldest member of the team, everybody makes an impact. And likewise with artists, my hope is that everybody comes in with the intention of making an impact. So I try to foster collaboration, creativity, impact, and really just empower people to kind of, I guess, push for their own dreams, their own trajectories, kind of back to that unique brilliance. It's something we do every year. We actually work through what is our unique brilliance and are we there? Are we working in that realm to be the best as and to do the best work at the company? So yeah, I guess to sum it into a mantra, I guess maybe it's even a word and that would be impact.
Impact. I like that. I like that. Impact. Yep. Be, you know, someone told me a long time ago, be intentional and be impactful. So, you know, everything you do it with intent, and you do it 110%. So I like that, impact. I might have to make that my third mantra. I don't know.
It's good. I think really when you tell people, every time I interview somebody, I always say, listen, everybody on the team makes impact, and they do, and they make a lot of impact, to be honest. I mean, I really I just love our team, and I know that they're out there with the best of intentions representing artists. You know, at the core mission is our belief that artists deserve sustainable careers, and our work is to support that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you 110% on that. You know, I wanted to ask you something too, because y'all are making an amazing impact. You continue to make an amazing impact. How do you feel about music licensing as a whole? I know culturally things have progressed and changed. Like as far as the direction of music licensing, do you feel that there are any areas that can be improved upon? Or like, what's your take on that in general? Like, where do you see things headed down the road?
Oddly enough, music licensing is still so old school, and for 99% of music, it's still so difficult to license music. It's lawyers and process and multiple parties and sign-offs. So I don't think we've successfully addressed the issues with music licensing. I think there's a lot of opportunity too, and I think there's a lot of opportunity in the metaverse as well to like kind of right some of the things that haven't worked very well. But I don't know. I guess for me, I'd like to see things make a lot more progress, because people are not, especially with user-generated content, and sorry if I've used UGC. When I say UGC, I'm talking about user-generated content, which is stuff like mm-hmm. TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. With user-generated content, 99% of the world doesn't know that they can't just take a song and use it. Copyrights are very complex. People don't realize that, you know, they can't just use music. And our systems still really don't have things set up in a fantastic way for that to happen, because ultimately that license still is not there. So if that piece ends up going off somewhere bigger than someone expected, they will be hearing from the you know, from the record label or whatever. So I'd like to just see things get further dialed in as we evolve. And there is a ton of money to be made in music within that realm. So I'd really like to see that the players are valuing the music in a way that is both equitable to the user, but understanding that the user is different if it's a user of user-generated content as opposed to a user of, you know, a song for a trailer or a TV commercial.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You know, and we're so big on financial literacy here. Like, that's key. Like, that's what we always teach artists, like, know your worth. And I always say then add tax to that. Like, make sure that you're being fairly compensated for the work that you do. And, you know, that's one of the stark differences that I noticed, like, when I first started in music licensing, that I kind of felt like during that time period that at least artists were always, well, at least consistently fairly compensated. Now, you know, there's a lot of different ways that companies approach it. I've got approached by a lot of companies too, where it's like, you look at the paperwork and the math ain't mathing. It don't make sense. So, you know, if you have a great song or you have a great catalog, I encourage every artist to know your value, know your worth, and don't let someone diminish the value of your content. Because what ends up happening if you sell yourself short, whether it's a bad contract, whether it's a bad split percentage, whether they're underselling you or undervaluing you, then, I mean, you kind of start to lose value as an artist too, because I know that every artist wants to have their music in as many different libraries as possible. Because, like, when we talked about having multiple streams of income, you know, but I don't want artists to jump out the window blindly, you know, like, hey, well, I got my music in 30 libraries, you know, and this library is selling my whole catalog for $10 a year. It's like, no, nah, brother, you know, yeah. Like, you can't. Yeah. You know, have multiple streams of income that make sense, you know. Yeah. So when you're giving your music to these different companies, just make sure that they have a vested interest in your content and you as an artist to make sure that you're not being undervalued, you know.
And it can shoot an artist in the foot. We've actually had clients ask us to refund them because they found a non-exclusive artist of ours available in an all-you-can-eat catalog that was, wow, you know, pretty inexpensive per month. And so they wanted us to refund the money. And that's a really crazy situation. I mean, you know, we understand what the client is doing with it, and so therefore we're pricing it accordingly. So basically the way that we do things is, if you're above 50 people or you're using it for anything outside of web, then you have to call and talk to a rep, because at that point there's very likely you should be paying more than, you know, kind of our personal rate is, you know, 15 to I think 21 a month if you pay monthly, and then our small business rate is, I think, sorry, I don't know them off the top of my head,
but all right, call
it 59 to 75 per month.
Right.
Once you're above that, you really should actually talk to a rep and figure out, you know, is this going to be used in a TV commercial? Is it going to be used in, you know, even a big media buy online? So that's how we kind of cut the lines. And that's back to the family of brands. We have ASX, which is our film, TV, you know, video game advertising, what I call more of like your traditional licensing arm. Mm-hmm. And that team focuses on that vertical. And then we have our e-commerce platform, which is intended to be very streamlined and simple for people who are just creating personal content. Maybe they have a YouTube channel and they can even monetize it, or small businesses that are, you know, using it for small sync. And so we really kind of accommodate both of those things.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Jen. And you just mentioned like, you know, the different types of placements, like whether it's television, whether it's a major film or video games. Like, in your professional opinion, because, I mean, you've been doing this for so long, are there certain types of placements that tend to pay more? Like, you know, would it be like movies tend to pay more, TV or video games? Like, which would you say, like, tend to compensate artists or have like the bigger payouts or bigger budgets?
Yeah, I mean, for sure the film and TV side for us. I would say at the peak for us is trailer music, but that is not usually commercially released music. It's not bands, although they will use bands occasionally in a trailer. But a lot of times you get that, you know, that big epic score. And that's really music that is written for that purpose. And so, and that was, you know, when we kind of moved into the realm of trailer music, we had to get new music. So that's at the highest end, as well as big TV commercials. Then under that would be sort of varying degrees of like promotional use. Typically promotions are going to be, including web promotions, are going to pay more than like background music or in context, as we call it. So if your track is selected for use inside of a show, to be honest, it's really variable. I mean, it can be, you know, we've had people that come to us for as low as a few hundred. And then, you know, if it's a more featured spot, it can be many thousands. But in context or inside of the show itself, not promotionally, is mm-hmm. definitely going to pay less than if it's featured, highlighted, used in a title, credit, or again, used promotionally, advertorially.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's amazing. Well, you know, for all the artists out there, y'all heard it first, you know, the GOAT, the legend, Jen Anderson Miller, you know, she put it down. She represented. So the last question, Jen, well, it's a 2-part question. The first part of that is, you know, are there any, well, I know there's always exciting things on the horizon. So what's next for Audio Socket? At least those things that you can talk about for now. And number two, lastly, for any artists that's interested, that feel that their music is at that level, how can they submit to you guys?
Sure. I'll start with the second one first, because it's relatively simple. If you go to the website and you scroll to the bottom and you look down there, there's a submit music. So an application process. As I mentioned, please be patient, because I believe, and we need to change this, it says you'll hear from us in 90 days, but the reality is there's quite a long queue. And so again, it really boils down to the fact that we do want to give it a good listen, and we do listen to all 4 tracks that you submit, but we have thousands of people submit. So be patient with us. And that's really the audition cycle. And then if you're accepted, then you receive an invitation, like a digital invitation. And then we have wonderful people. I know you adore Sarah. She's the one who brought you on. And but we've got, you know, a lovely group of people that then work with you to answer your questions about the contract, about payments, about how it all works, PROs, all of it. And so so then people kind of go through, you know, either they review it and they understand it themselves, or they ask questions, and then they kind of go through the onboarding process. So auditions first. And then your second question about what's exciting and new. 2023 is just, it feels different. Honestly, I'm really excited. And I'm sure it's because, you know, coming off of the heels of 2 very wildly unpredictable years of COVID, this is the first year where I'm like, okay, feet firmly planted. The rug's not going to be pulled out from underneath me with another big lockdown. I feel great. Momentum's super high, but we also have launched some new partnerships. And the biggest one that's recent is with Canva. It's basically a platform for creators that can go in and they can create all kinds of different, I mean, whether it's a web video that you want to use for an advertisement or a PowerPoint presentation, you can find, you know, fonts, you can find music, you can find videos, photos. So our music is now available to that community, which as of October, they hit 100 million monthly active users. And so that's huge. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of exposure. And what's upcoming is, you know, as with Canva, these things take, quite honestly, oftentimes a year to get off the ground from the time that you're talking to the time of launch. So I can't say yet, but we have some really super exciting conversations happening with other partners. And so I would say I'm most excited about that. But we've also just had a lot of activity already in 2023 on the film and TV side. So to me, it's all of it. And then we service a developer community, and that's always exciting because we don't know where we're going with them, but into the metaverse for sure. And, you know, games and apps and, So I guess I'm excited about a lot of things this year, but, you know, knock on wood, hopefully the rest of the year is as good as the first couple weeks.
Definitely. Well, I know it will be because, you know, it's an amazing company you have and amazing people, like, and that goes a long way. Like, it's not just business, it's a family. So definitely appreciate your professionalism and your friendship as well, you know.
Yeah, so. Likewise.
Yeah, so, you know, so y'all heard it here first. Sync Music Mondays, Case Box. Shout out my brother JS, aka the best. Big shout out to Audio Sockets. Y'all heard it here from Jen. If y'all want to submit, definitely submit your music. Much success as always. Peace.